of the money. So I was very excited to write it. And I appreciate that you can share some of these stories, things that are happening. We wanted to have the minutes adopted today, Comrades and Honourable Members, before we start anything, because these minutes have to go to the ATC for publication. So I wonder, in your envelopes, are there a set of your minutes there? Where are the minutes for the Paul is giving a very trivial excuse, but there are many committees that are photocopying there, and our minutes are busy photocopying them now. And it's a very, very trivial reason, because I, Paul, knew last week that there will be a meeting today, so I'm not taking this excuse. But we will adopt those minutes as and when they arrive to us here. The other thing, honorable members, is that the Speaker of the National Assembly called me yesterday or 2 days ago and said that we are going to be needed because the MTF and the Hyundai, they are bringing these balls that are signed to us, to Parliament. And the Portfolio Committee of Sports have to lead that process for the signing of that those two boards, the MTM one and the Super the Hyundai. But the other one is going to be in the yard here in Parliament and then put on a court, I don't know how many meters long, and then so that everybody must see it on in the evening and then for a certain period of time to signify us ushering the 2010 World Cup. So I'm sure we're going to be very important. And the other thing that in last week's meeting of the chairs, it has been changed. The Parliament chairs through the Speaker, they've requested us to change our visit to the SADC region, not to be the only committee that goes to the SADC region. And then we have four committees that are going to go there. The Committee of Home Affairs, we are going to do the border and also checking what is going on there. So we are going to do a whole city and a border. For an example, if we are in Lesotho, we will be doing Bloemfontein, which is 110 kilometers from Lesotho. So Pori is arranging with the Minister of Lesotho and the Parliament of Lesotho. After that, we'll be putting in Bloemfontein. The following day, we'll be moving to Mpumalanga. And then, but we are going to do a country, and when you come back, we do the whole city. So we'll be doing Swaziland and come and do Mpumalanga at the Bombela Stadium. And go to Zimbabwe and do Peter Mkapa. And go to Botswana and do Royal Bafokeng. And Royal Bafokeng and Gauteng, most likely. So we are going to do it in that way. My passport has expired, so I'm just asking honorable members, you know the official passport for members of Parliament is done here in this building. I don't know which floor. So please, Pori will give you the details. Go and check your passport and do them now, because it is said we must give them a month to prepare, especially international visits. So this beginning of this month, Pori will start putting things around our visit. The other thing that has been requested is that if a member thinks that he's going to come back, please, we must not take that member along, because that member puts a lot of strain to other members, and then it becomes Donald Lee and myself, other members have gone, because they have their urgent commitment. So if you have an urgent commitment, you must not even attempt to come, because we are not going to allow you to come back home, because spending money to release you from Botswana, you take a flight and come back, and from there you take another flight and go and meet us in Polokwane. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be a complete journey with all of us. If other people have the commitment, and then they must not even attempt to be part of us, because we're not going to allow them to do that. So, thank you, honorable members. The last point, I've seen Donald Lee congratulating the Grace, but he didn't congratulate Suga. Today today we are having a birthday of two of our own honorable members, of our own. But I don't see the cake, Suka. Have you forgotten that it's your birthday today? You have forgotten? Okay. So Suka and Grace is their birthday. Grace is getting 18, Suka is getting 75. So we wish them a happy birthday. Please don't spoil your day today. You must be happy and then go and spend money, and then a credit card, the lawyers must ask for you to pay the money back if you use your credit card. Thank you, honorable members. Honorable members, today the second is not only marking the birth of the birthday of Grace and Suka. Today is one of the historic days that I think has been going around on the television. To the country, not only to the African National Congress, it's a very important day. But it's a historic day when the former president de Klerk released and unbanned political parties in prison. Those who were with us in Victor Sester will tell you how hot that day was. But we're waiting for this tall man to come out of Victor Sester, because many of us was for the first time that we see him. And after that, Donald, you recall, the process of negotiation started. And then that was the time of the real negotiation that has given birth to this democratic South Africa that all of us today enjoy. I hope all of us will not forget that day, this day. But this day is underplayed when the two extremes, the persona non grata, a black, and a fugitive and a dissident in his own country, and then by a white who has an exclusive right because of his color to be the owner of the country, and others must be the second citizens of this country. And a most extreme organization unbanned Nelson Mandela unexpectedly. So that our children must know those things. Because if they don't know about those things, they will think that this freedom that we have, that other people just kick it, is the freedom that many of our people died in the struggle. One Freedom Front guy said that, yeah, there was a white woman social worker who died when we were doing a TV debate with him. So that, yes, there was one white woman social worker who died during the unrest. I said one white woman is not equal to thousands of black people who were mowed down by the racist army of apartheid. So you can't just come and tell us that kind of a story. At least you must be ashamed to say one white woman died, and when thousands of black people died in the long streets of Soweto and Kukuletu and in Port Elizabeth and elsewhere. It's a very touching day for some of us who have paid the price, and today we've got to be subservient of those who were on the privileged side up until today. It's a very touching subject. But I'm sure the Congress of the People is sharing the part of us that for you to be the real Congress of the People, it's first to be on the side of the oppressed. And white people are still the oppressors today in this country. And black people are still the oppressed. We're happy to see people like you stand up and say, it cannot be an oppression to eternal. The time has to come where we stop it, and then say we must live equally as unequal people in this country. And the race must go equal, but at least we're buried long ago. Thank you very much. We are taking the first annual report on the drug free. The CFO, I have accepted your apology. But we're grateful to you to send an apology. There's a little problem that many people are doing, CFO, for drug free. The annual report is an annual report of the money that we are giving to drug free. So it is compulsory in terms of the PFMA that you must come and report to Parliament and submit your annual report so that the Parliament must be able to appropriate another money for you to be able to do random testing and all other requirements that are mandatory from the Act to drug-free. And say to the doctor, we appreciate that. And then, but next year, let us do an annual report earlier, because now we have to do it as quickly we're doing the budget. And the processes for budget have changed. So I don't want you to try your luck, because the portfolio committee, in terms of the money bill, is the portfolio committee, not the minister, who decide on the budget, whether that budget is enough or it is not enough. So we've done the what you call the money bills last week and related matters. So it warrants you to be very careful that the submissions of those things are on time, the patterns for spending are not bad, and then at the end of the year, 3 months left, and then somebody spends 35% of his own budget. So let us look into those things. I want to inform you about them so that yourself you check on the internet that the portfolio committees have gone through the workshop on the money bills. So they are deciding about the money bills. I don't want you to be caught on the wrong side of the law, because finally you will not get money for appropriation, because who will be deciding on that matter now? It is the constitution that says there should be money bill. Parliament must appropriate money, and then because it is the responsibility of Parliament to check whether the money is enough or not enough, and whether the money has been spent wisely or it was not spent wisely. So, thank you for that. I would take quickly from you, Drug Free, your presentation for this annual report. The members are going to take questions, ask you questions for clarity on your report. We've got your annual report. I wonder whether members are having theirs with them, but it's fine. Present it there, and then so that you conclude. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. It's definitely an honor for us to be the first public body or sports entity to present in the first committee meeting for this year, 2010 being a very auspicious year for all of us in this court. First off, I just have to extend our apologies for the board chairman, Dr. Mandra, who is overseas on business. And I'd also like to introduce on my left our CFO, Mr. Bubi Saban, before I proceed. What I'm going to cover today is just some achievements, our core business, what we reported to the Portfolio Committee last year, some questions that were asked last year, and how we've acted on those questions from the Portfolio Committee.
Chairperson, the CFO only introduced one person, but I see there are other people there too. Are they not in the...
No, I'm sure there are two. The other gentlemen, you know them after that presentation.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I know them in.
Okay.
Just some background to the agency for the new members to the committee. The agency was established in 1997 by an Act of Parliament, the Drug Free Sport Act. 80% of our funding is received from the Department of Sport. And all the legislation that Parliament enacted makes all major international and national sports competitions in South Africa have to comply or eligible under the anti-doping rules. Sports federations' constitutions have to recognize South African anti-doping rules. And when I'm referring to sports federations, I'm only referring to national sports federations. And by virtue of provincial sports federations' membership to the national federation, they automatically have to comply with the anti-doping rules. Non-compliance, the Act gives the Institute the authority to report to the Minister of Sport any non-compliance.
Donald, hands up, say that you must explain why that rugby player is found with drugs when you have that responsibility to test the rugby, cricket, and all that. But you'll answer that later, because I saw Donald has been reading a lot about this drug lot of rugby players. So I think you must answer that at the end.
I will address it in a bit later. On the issue of non-compliance, there were two sport entities that we reported to the Minister that did not adhere, respect, or comply with the Drug-Free Sports Act and the anti-doping rules. One of that federations is the South African Shooting Federation, and that was reported to the Minister. The Minister cut off their funding, temporarily cut off their funding, and SASCOC withdrew their privilege or their right to award for South African Shooting to be awarded national colors. Currently, we are in mediation in that process, and we'll report the outcome of that mediation to the Portfolio Committee. The other sports entity was Boxing South Africa. Due to their own internal issues and the legal opinion that they received, they refused to hold a tribunal for the one of the boxers that tested positive, which you may have read in the newspaper, Jared Lovett. He tested positive in July. Boxing still has not had a tribunal. The law specifically says that you have to hold a tribunal and inform the athlete within 2 months or 60 days of notification. They refused to do that. The Institute, to respect the rights of the athlete, we are holding the tribunal on behalf of boxing. Boxing will be obliged to recognize it, and we will also bill boxing for the expenses that we have incurred, which is their responsibility, and we have reported the issue to the Minister of Sport. We will also update the Portfolio Committee on the outcome of that issue with boxing. So that's the negative part of the compliance. I also want to bring to the attention of the committee the good news is where sports entities voluntarily comply and come to us and say, how can we better comply with the Drug-Free Sports Act to be part of the rules. Now, a sports entity that is really a private organization or company that is not specifically legally in terms of the way sport is structured to comply with the anti-doping rules globally and nationally, it's golf. And we're talking about professional golf. However, in South Africa, the golf, which is the Sunshine Tour representing the World PGA, initiated a meeting with the Institute for Drug-Free Sport and said, we want to have anti-doping rules as part of our constitution. And I can proudly proclaim that this has been published, the 2010 Sunshine Tour Anti-Doping Program, which was published 2 weeks ago. And I will be launching and doing the presentation next week at the Sunshine Tour tournament at Fancourt, where we will do an education on the professional golfers and start drug testing on the golfers. And some of you may know that golf and the US PGA had one of its first positives last year. So golf is not immune to the scourge of drugs in their sport. Again, just further background as I proceed for newer members. The board of directors for the Institute is listed here. We had two resignations during the financial year under review. Dr. Bebo Gokwana was one of your honorable colleagues due to his parliamentary commitments, and Dr. Mamisa Chabula due to her business commitments and loans felt obliged to resign. The board remains intact, and the board is appointed by the Minister of Sport on a 5-year cycle. Our corporate governance in our audit committee, last year one of the reports from the Auditor General that we didn't have an audit committee, and the issue was that we shared an audit committee with the Department of Sport. Subsequent to my presentation to the Portfolio Committee, I met with the Director General Mr. Peterson, and he recommended that we form our own audit committee so that the internal audit process can proceed. Our audit committee is made up of Advocate Dave Mitchell, who is also a CA, Ms. Penny White, who also serves on the Provincial Department of Education's audit committee, and Mr. Jonathan George, who is also a CA. Our internal auditors are Mazars, Moores, Rowland, and they do various audit services also on behalf of the Auditor General, so they are well-versed with the PFMA and public bodies. Now coming to the annual report and the year under review, we're in 2010, but the year under review that we're looking at is 2008-2009, and as the Honourable Chairman mentioned, just in terms of the parliamentary cycle and availability, this presentation has been delayed. The audit is performed by the Auditor General as outlined in the legislation. The Institute received an unqualified report, meaning with no major financial irregularities. I know in Parliament, during this period, you review many annual reports of public entities, and a few months later, we always get questions of how much did you spend on the annual report. So this year, I'm including that for those members that are interested. The annual report is published in CD and print format, and we delivered 600 copies of the CD. And the reason we put it on CD because it was a significant cost saving. And as you recall, in our presentation last year, we came to you on our presentation basically with a begging bowl in hand and saying the funding is not sustainable. And I pledged to the portfolio committee with the existing funding, we'll still achieve some of our core objectives. But if you do lobby us for additional funding, that doesn't mean we will not still try to achieve efficiency and cost-saving measures. So publishing it on a CD is part of our cost-saving measures. A CD unit per unit cost is 18 Rand, and we did 25 of these hard copies, which is 90 Rand per unit copy. The financial performance, which is outlined in the annual report, now historically since the promulgation of the legislation in 1997, we received a 5% to 10% annual increase, and again the case was made last year for additional funding to meet the compliance obligations to the Portfolio Committee and then subsequently to the Department of Sport. The presentation to the Portfolio Committee for the Institute definitely bore fruit in that the Department of Sport and gave us a serious audience and listened to our case, and it was supported by the endorsement of the Portfolio Committee. And I'm glad to say in the MTF period, which was, I think, October, November, where Minister Gordon announced additional funding, the MTF period, we were awarded an additional million for this year. And then also in the next three-year budget cycle, we've been awarded 100% to 110% increase in our overall government grant. And that was based on when the Honourable Chairman asked me, well, if this is what you, if this is what you cannot work with, what can you work with? And I gave you the amount that we can work with that will make us sustainable, and the Department of Sport basically took those amounts that we gave to you and made the grant based on those amounts. So obviously the question is going to be, now that you have your increased funding, what are your priorities and how does it change? Are there any additions? The priorities have been expanded. The major priority is drug awareness and anti-doping education to school. The question or the comment that you mentioned earlier about the problem of drug use and steroid use in high school, we recognize that. We know it's a problem. There are some legal frameworks or hoops that we have to jump through, and I can touch on that later in terms of jurisdiction with the Department of Education versus Department of Sport. The other priorities will be, instead of just doing this once-off education campaign where we go to various schools. We're trying to incorporate it into the life orientation curriculum, where specifically the ALO curriculum deals with not only drugs in sport, but also drugs from an anti-doping perspective. Another priority is the athlete biological passport. Lastly, in our presentation, Dr. Mandra spoke in detail about what we will be doing with blood testing, building athlete profiles in terms of blood and steroid profiles, and also the research associated with that. And I have to mention, in terms of the research, the Institute doesn't operate in isolation or parochially, that we only involve South Africans. We do collaborate with our continental peers, whether it's at university or those in sports bodies. So our research does reflect continental trends in sport or in performance-enhancing substances on the continent. Anti-doping intelligence and investigative framework. We started the groundwork on this, and I have to admit the progress has been very, very slow. The key role player, which is the Central Drug Authority, has been a bit slow. The CDA was supposed to host the summit in February, where I was supposed to do two presentations. Unfortunately, it was cancelled due to the president not being available, President Zuma not being available to open it and to participate in it. We will be increasing the overall testing, and I will come later when I give you the statistics of testing, that we decreased the number of tests last year by 22% because of the budget constraints. So we will be increasing it above that 22% in the new funding cycle. And obviously improved compliance. The chairman, honorable chairman, has been reminding me about our obligations, not only to Parliament, but to the PFMA, and how easy it is just to, in other words, fall off the wagon in terms of compliance and be complacent. So we are aware of that and constantly need to, as is our responsibility, to comply with the PFMA, but also to improve on that compliance, as there's always room for improvements in PFMA compliance. Doping control statistics, I mentioned there was a 22% decrease. So for the year under review, we did 2,200. In the new budget cycle, we're shooting for between 2,800 and 3,000 tests per annum. And in addition to that, it's only urine testing. There will also be blood testing. In competition, and in competition is defined as when you are tested after your competitive events, so after a soccer match or after a rugby match. It's a different profile, profile or battery of drugs that are tested for, versus out of competition where we can knock on the door of an athlete, whether it's 6 a.m. in the morning or 10 o'clock at night with no notice, and request that they provide us with a sample. So that's the difference between in and out of competition. The top five sports codes that we tested during the year under review is rugby, athletics, soccer or football, cycling, swimming. The reason that these five sports codes are traditionally the top testing codes are because of the level of competition. South Africa are world champions or highly ranked in many of these codes, and also because of what we call the doping profile risk of the sport. So a sport such as golf or shooting or table tennis has a different doping risk profile to rugby or athletics. Doping control violations, we had 28 positive tests during the year under review. 6 were for marijuana, 4 diuretics, and the 10 stimulants. Stimulants are substances like cocaine, amphetamines, and those things. And unfortunately, we are seeing an increase in the use amongst athletes of substances like cocaine and methamphetamine, which the generic name is TIC. And you will recall a few weeks ago at the beginning of the year, the cocaine case with Pedro Wannenberg with rugby. I would like to promise or say to the committee that you'll see a decrease. Obviously, I cannot. Sport reflects general society, and South African society is showing an increased usage of cocaine and TIC. Again, our education campaign is key in terms of bringing and addressing that issue and bringing it to the attention of both our sports leaders and the athletes. The one refusal was an athlete who refused to be tested. It was show jumping in terms of the horses. The National Federation and the International Federation took the athlete to the highest appeal process in sport, which is the Court of Arbitration in Switzerland, and the Court of Arbitration upheld the decision to ban the athlete for 2 years. So that prosecution was successful. Some key performance indicators that we spoke about last year, when we reported to you, one of the questions that were asked, how can we measure you for the next time that you come in, what promises are you making? I spoke about the National Test Distribution Plan, an anti-doping education campaign, the investigations framework, and our administration. On the National Test Distribution Plan, we have the registered testing pool, which is as we refer to as the RTP, which is now part of the international standards for testing mandated by WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency, where we take a select highly elite group of our athletes, and they are supposed to provide whereabouts through a database, and whereabouts means they have to tell us 24/7 where they are going to be, and we can test them at any point, no matter how many times. Last year we had 63 athletes in our RTP program. That's all. That's the really the amount that we can manage. We've increased that amount to 126 this year, and we're hoping to increase that amount further to at least 250. So with the national testing pool, we did the training for the athletes to make them aware of the process, what the compliance are, the rules and regulations, and their rights as being one of the inductees in this program. The ADAMS database is international software that the athletes input the information in, that we input the testing information, and sports entities like the Olympic Committee, FIFA, or FINA, IRB, they all have access to their respective athletes, when they were tested and where they are. The athlete biological passport, that is specifically a program on blood testing and steroid profiling, where we will test and look at the profile of an athlete over a period, and we, based on the profile and makeup of the blood and the urine samples, we will be able to determine whether that athlete is trying to manipulate his or her system in terms of doping. And we call that a soft positive, because you're not going to get an analytical positive. The lab is not going to show you, as with the traditional cases, this athlete tested positive for an anabolic steroid, because the market is so sophisticated that many athletes have been beating the system, as the case with Marion Jones and Tim Montgomery. So we've improved our standards that we can now build profiles and be able to detect where there is soft doping happening. Anti-doping education, the school's project funded by the CDA last year, it was a pilot project where we went to 7 schools around the country, where we conducted an anti-doping education program in the form of industrial theater. And the main thrust of this program wasn't so much the delivery of the material, but to gauge what level of information and what questions the high school players know about drugs, about performance-enhancing substance, and what they know about sports supplements. And unfortunately, the outcome of that was very disturbing, that amongst our high school players, especially rugby players, there's a very sophisticated knowledge of steroids, of how long it takes, our knowledge such as how long it takes to clear the body, how long it works, what substances can be detected, what cannot be detected, dosage. So there's a very, very sophisticated level of knowledge, which we now have to tailor our content towards, that it addresses these issues. On Thursday, we embark on a national 45-day roadshow campaign with South African Rugby, where they go to every town, small town and major town, not every or almost every town around the country, with their 7 seven trophies. We've partnered with South African Rugby to include in that champions tour that there is also a drug awareness campaign along that tour where we will be talking and addressing and doing activities with those that visit the tour. And the target market on that tour is predominantly high school kids because a lot of the visits will occur at school. So we saw that as an opportune partnership. Investigations, collaboration with the Medicines Control Council and with the Central Drug Authority, as I mentioned, that's progressing a bit slower, but we do, we are working towards stronger links, and I will request during the year perhaps another presentation with the Portfolio Committee, not only to update you specifically on this issue, but to ask your support, because we will need political support to get our political leaders, our ministers, to stand behind us, to get the administration to really come on board. The priorities in the country are high-level criminal activities. Although this doesn't form part of that priority, it still is a criminal issue. So we're hoping for some political support on this issue. We've been lucky to get the assistance from Australia in terms of policies and infrastructure development. They are the leaders in the world, and I know the committee sometimes visits other countries, and Australia being one of the sports leaders, and if you do happen to visit Australia, I would urge you to listen or to hear one of their presentations of how they've developed their drug investigations framework. Administration, and again, we, as I mentioned on compliance, one of our key performance areas is the unqualified audit report from the Auditor General. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Drugfree. Honourable members, those who have questions on the presentation made by Drugfree, we can take those clarities and questions to the gentleman who has just made the presentation. Comrade Cedric is the number one, Honourable Donald Lee, and then Honourable Mackenzie. Is there any other hand? Okay, in that order? Okay. One, Cedric. Two, Mr. Lee. Three, Ms. Mackenzie. And Mr. van der Linden, number four. Let's go in that order.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I think the presenter mentioned that in terms of the sport codes that were tested and so forth, but can you be more specific to tell us what is the procedure or how do you go about doing this? Because you mentioned the different codes, rugby, athletics, and the numbers next week, but at what level is this testing taking place? Because recently, and you mentioned the example of Pedri Warrenburg, and it's very disappointing, Chairperson, to see that absolutely nothing happened to the person who was mentioned. He's still playing professional rugby, going about business as usual. And what form of deterrent is there? And who imposes the deterrent once a sports person is tested positively for making use of what is also called these recreational drugs that are taking place? Because surely, if you do your test and you return positive results and absolutely nothing happens after that, it sends out a very wrong message to those very same young rugby players that you are trying to target to stay away from these forms of recreational drugs. So I just need clarity on that, Chairperson. And then, secondly, in terms of, and we understand the issue of funding of the institute, it has always been, whenever they come and they make their presentations, this point has been raised, and we supported them so that this can be increased, so that the scope of their work can be better appreciated. But we had an incident, if you can recall, where there was, upon the intervention of SASFOC, that the institute either refused or was reluctant to test athletes that participated in the Ironman event that took place in Port Elizabeth, because apparently certain people in SASFOC felt that the event was not properly sanctioned by them, or there was a disagreement between the different entities. Can you just elaborate and respond to that, please?
Yeah, when you respond to Comrade Cedric, I want you to coin this with a confessed drug abuser in the spot, because this gentleman, after all other things, and then he confessed that yes, he's using drugs, but you are not sure whether he's still using the drugs or what is happening now, but he's still going around doing as if nothing is wrong in that, and it's encouraging our children because they see this hero. Nothing happens to him, and then he can use drugs as he so pleased. I think you must answer to those things so that we must help you to go into these problems and resolve these issues. Donald?
Chairperson, first of all, I want to congratulate Drug Free Sport for the fact that you received an unqualified report. I think that is very, very positive, and that's very, very good. I really want to commend you for that achievement, because it's seldom that it happens, and it's good that it happened in your case. Now, Chairperson, we spoke about rugby, and it seemed as if we spoke about senior rugby, but the big problem is that schoolboy rugby. It is a massive problem there, because one is physical. And secondly, you know, there's a lot of pride at stake, and they do everything and anything to achieve a victory. I know that it will cost a lot of money to really do testing at school level. Now, my question is, Chairperson, whether they've approached the Department of Education. You see, there are different departments. They come to us to sports. Sometimes education says, you know, school rugby is our domain. Is there their domain? Have you approached the Department of Education for support too? Because, you know, those kids are at school. Then, Chairperson, the other important point is, I don't think anybody should really be above the law. There was a guy, a boxer, you said boxing, refused to have somebody tested. Golf got on board. No, they have a choice. You know, we want to get on board if we want to get on board. And it shouldn't be like that. I think it should be statutory and compulsory for somebody to, you know, for these codes to belong and to undergo these tests, Chairperson. So I just want an explanation there. Then you spoke about was it polo or some horse thing that you spoke about?
Show
jumping, that's what I'm saying. Now, you tested the athlete. You also test the animal. Because, you know, the outcome of the competition relies on the horse. So, do we also test horses or animals when they are in competition? You understand? It's interesting. And then, lastly, Chairperson, two of the board members resigned. Have they been replaced? And when will they be replaced, if not as chairperson? Thanks.
On the issue of the board that Lee is speaking about, if there's a problem in the Act on the replacement of members of the board, you must tell us so that we must be able to ask for an amendment to Parliament so that there should be no gap. We are sitting with an entity that is completely paralyzed as we speak. Two or three members of the board. But one thing that was done there was never a piece of a line that says, in an event the board doesn't form a quorum, it's paralyzed, and therefore that board must be dissolved. So we're sitting with that kind of a dilemma. And it's an experience that we've seen even in the SABC. And we are not going to leave that to chance and say those are boards, they are holier than members of parliament, and therefore we can't do anything about it. If there's a problem of legislation, we are ready to ask for an amendment and correct the legislation so that there should be compliance. So I want you to add on that question when you answer that. Mr. McKenzie?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Donald has covered most of what I wanted to say. But just on the testing, the positive tests, how many school children tested positive, if any of them were tested? And secondly, you mentioned the confusion between Department of Sport and Department of Education. I would have thought that the potential of criminal activity, school sport, and your testing should take priority over objections from the Department of Education. So I'd just like your comment on that. Thank you.
Mr. van der Linde?
Actually, Donald mentioned, actually, or asked everything that I actually wanted to, but I mean, I wanted to congratulate Drug Free also on the unqualified report. We've got 2, 4, 5 codes which is listed, but for our sake, it will actually be good to have the rest also. And I mean, I'm from hockey and rugby, but it will be good to see the others also. The other coach and how many tests is done and so on, so that we know that. Are the amount of schools which you went to go to testing, are you going to have a serious increase? Donald spoke about the rugby to be the biggest, the best school in rugby and so on. That's the same with some of the other coaches also in other schools, where they want to be the best school. So it's actually good to know if there's going to be increase, and not just only with rugby, because that's the same thing happening with other schools also. Don't touch on the resignation of the board members, so I won't touch there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Suka, you're the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must appreciate this presentation. I'm trying to take myself back to the memory lane of that presentation, the other presentations. Because I'm trying to grapple in my mind, it's very brief, this report. And I'm trying to find some serious substance. Because once you talk annual report, it means you give yourself time to give us the entirety of the report of your performance so that one can read, because this will become a public document so that anyone who sits there can read about what you have done and influence the thinking of the portfolio committee, whether to say let's give them more funds or not in terms of the incremental 5% to 10% per annum. I'm not sure. I'm trying to maybe the structure of how it is reported. I know that you've met the regulations of the AG's requirements, but surely we would want to have some more meat on the report. For instance, on your top 5 codes that you are reflecting here, I would have loved to see which areas, if you speak rugby, that were tested, and 423 and so on, athletics 17. I would want to know which areas of the country where these testing have taken place, or which parts seems to be more problematic. If you talk provinces, well, we understand maybe it's easy to identify, to say this code in this area is a problem. But this one now is a bit generic. Now it does not give me a clear picture where these problems are located. I know it's rugby. And if you speak of 400 plus, it does not give me a clearer picture as to who we are. I'm just saying that that's one area. I thought that this issue of the anabolic steroids have been dealt severely, but it seems to be always come back from time to time over a number of years. It is a problem. I'm not sure what is your contribution to turn around the situation around these drugs, because because it's marijuana, I thought that maybe we can always enter into some negotiations from the countries where it comes from to tighten up its belt, we know informally where it comes from. But surely we need to step up our interaction with those countries so that also our internal control, we are more closely, especially when working closely with the law, the agents of law, in making sure that those who are found to be against the law to be reprimanded very severely. So, Chairperson, the report, yes, it's good, but I think more improvement could have been done so that it gives us a better picture when you speak annual report. I'm almost tempted to say it's an executive summary of a particular report. You know, I fall short to say that. So I'm not sure whether this is the manner in which it's been done. Thank you.
CEO, we can respond to.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll start with the Honorable Honorable Cedric. I'm not sure your last name. Just as the chairman referring to Cedric. Your questions on the procedure for testing, what level at the Pedri Wannenberg case. I'll deal with that one before I touch on the Iron Man. The procedure for testing in all codes is we have a test distribution plan. There's a scientific formula that we use based on the sports code, determines how high on the priority and what quantity of testing you're going to get. So a sport like rugby, athletics traditionally will go to the top as opposed to a sport, say, like badminton or squash. So that's just basically a scientific thing. In terms of the level of testing, again, based on resources and budget, we've only concentrated on the provincial, national, and international level across the board, irrespective of the sport, sports code. Unless we have specific information about doping occurring on a lower level, on a club level, as there has been information given to us both in rugby and cycling, we will test on that level if we know, if we're positive of our jurisdiction, and that if we have a fairly legally watertight case. So that's the level that testing usually occurs and how we determine the type of testing. With the case of Pedri Wannenberg and his admitted cocaine use, the Blue Bulls and Springbok rugby player, Pedri Wannenberg was tested 4 times by us during the period that he was taking cocaine. Now, he was tested in competition, and one has to understand that cocaine can clear the body depending on your size, and he's a pretty big man, and depending on what he's ingesting together with the cocaine, it can clear your body within 4 to 12 to 15 to 20 hours. So it totally depends on the metabolism. During the period that he admitted his cocaine use and when we tested him, he tested negative. So in terms of the rules of sport and in the legal framework in which we can conduct testing and prosecute someone on an anti-doping case, he tested negative. However, the new laws in sport in terms of the World Anti-Doping Code allow us, as in the Marion Jones case now this year, allows us to prosecute you with admitted use. With the Pedri case, the Bulls knew, I think, a year ago about this, and they used what we call the dipstick test to test him. So we didn't do the testing. The dipstick test won't necessarily stand up in a court of law within the jurisdiction of sport, and the Bulls used that as rehab. They were aware of his problem. He's an expensive player, talented player, and they didn't necessarily want to get rid of him. What we have spoke to South African Rugby and the Bulls about a protocol for future use, and that we should have been informed, and it shouldn't be kept under the lid, that we could have tested him even more often, as we've told him, and he's quite aware that we will test him more often. Now, also, if we test him, as I explained in the media, and I explained earlier to you, the difference between in competition and out of competition. In an in-competition test, and to make it easier the way I explained it, if you look at, if I call an in-competition test a Saturday test, and an out-of-competition test a Wednesday test. A Saturday test happens after the game. On a Saturday test, the battery of substances that we test for include stimulants, so cocaine. On a Wednesday test, when we test him at the practice at his home, it does not include stimulants. And that's not our rules, that's the international rules, that's the international code. And we have to have special reason to divert from that, and again, we have to have a legally watertight case if we are going to choose to do that. So on the Wednesday test that we've tested him, and on the Saturday test that we've tested him, he tested negative. What Mr. Wannenberg did was probably, what we can assume he did, was when he was taking cocaine, it was obviously not on a Friday night, otherwise we would have caught him. And it wasn't during the rugby season. If it was in the rugby season, it was on a Sunday to a Wednesday type of Thursday. So that's what he's doing. So that's the context of the case. And we did consult legal opinion on this issue. And with his admission and his public humiliation, and based on the legal resources that we have available, we did decide as a board not to pursue the case. The sanction for an athlete with a cocaine positive is a warning, or up to 6 months. So that's the sanction. He does not get a sanction of 2 years or a lifetime ban. Now, the case of the English rugby player that got the two-year ban is slightly different. That context was different. He was tested positive by the anti-doping agency. So the context and the legal jurisdiction and parameters that govern that case are different to the Pedri Wannenberg case. So I'm hoping that can address some of the issue. But again, as a follow-up, we have had discussions with South African rugby so that as we go forward, we don't have a repeat of the situation. And my main concern is obviously the integrity of the Institute for Drug-Free Sport, and that we are not accused of either complicity in covering up a positive or being prejudicial or favoring one type of sport over the other. And that was my major concern. We are an independent agency of all sport entity enabled by an act of parliament, and that's what we want to protect, and we're the custodians, and we will protect that and never want to be accused of being partial to any other sport. Your question on the positive test with recreational drugs, again with marijuana, cocaine, heroin, which is classified, or ecstasy, which is classified as a recreational drug, you can get anywhere from a warning to 6 months to a year for a first offense. With the repeat offense, again, you can get anywhere from a two-year ban to a lifetime ban. A year ago, South African football and the PSL went overboard. That may perceive that they've gone overboard with a two-year ban on the Platinum Stars player for marijuana. Again, the case there was that he had tested positive, not in our system, but in their system previously, and had admitted that he had a problem but did nothing in terms of rehabilitation. Pertaining to the Ironman, testing at the Ironman, that issue has been resolved. Again, in terms of jurisdiction and in terms of, it's easy for us to go anywhere and test. But when there is a positive test, in terms of the legal parameters and jurisdiction and who acts on it, we have to be careful, otherwise we just wasting time. With Ironman, it's a private entity like golf, or they were, they still are actually, a private entity like golf, just a normal corporation that happens to host sports events. Subsequent to the discussion, not only in South Africa, but internationally, they have signed on with the World Anti-Doping Agency and are signatories to the, both the UNESCO and World Anti-Doping Code. That then gives us jurisdiction to test them, but it also obliges them that when they have a positive to act within the framework of the anti-doping code. So that issue has been resolved, and we have been testing since with Ironman now regularly, and we have excellent cooperation with them. And they also have been, just like golf, have actually been proactive. They came, though they weren't part of the signature, they came proactively to us and said, please test us. And as I then discussed, not a refusal, but legally our hands are tied. You first have to get your constitution and other stuff in order. So I hope that addresses the issue of Ironman. To the Honorable Lee, the question on rugby, you asked about schoolboy rugby and approached the Department of Education for support. We are doing that now. We are working out a format and a protocol. When we do go to the Department of Education, we want to give them, this is what we need, this is what we want you to put in place. I think previously the Department of Sport went to the Department of Education and asked this, but there was no, not necessarily in terms of the testing perspective, concrete suggestions. So we are going to go with them with concrete suggestions so that they can give us or grant us that jurisdiction to test and also recognize the authority of the agency.
Chairperson, just on this matter, ask him for money too, because you must do this thing. And I think, you know, it's expensive. And ask him for money too, Chairperson.
Hey, don't you have press there so that we record, but it's fine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson.
Yeah, don't forget, because you remember when we wanted to charge the vice president of rugby. There was a problem with recording. So that case failed out because definitely would have sent it to Jake.
Ask him for money to Jake.
Thank you. Thank you, Donald.
I note your suggestion and recommendation. For your other comment was on the statutory obligation and the non-compliance of boxing. Boxing, all, as I explained earlier, all sports entities or bodies recognized by the Minister of Sport and by SASCOC. And what that means is anyone who can compete under compete officially internationally under the banner of representing South Africa all have to comply with the anti-doping rules. Again, I'm not, I feel like I'm going to be gossiping if I talk about boxing's house of order, but I'm going to attribute their non-compliance more to their house of order than, or their house of disorder more than anything else. But again, that the matter has been escalated to the Minister of Sport. In terms of the question with show jumping, testing of the athlete versus the animal, the International Olympic Committee and some countries like the UK, France, and I know China, they do test the animal where they have a regular testing program with both show jumping, which is an Olympic sport, and horse racing. We don't have that analytical capacity. We have looked at it a few years, and as our funding is more stabilized, we will be looking at that, because just from a sustainable funding, there is a lucrative market for us with testing of racehorses where that does occur. In terms of the board members, I first want to address the chairman's questions about legislation, whether the legislation gives us that flexibility in terms of replacing, and as you mentioned, the issue of quorum and if there are any restrictions. I have to revisit that and get back to you. I haven't looked at it from that perspective, but the Minister of Sport does appoint the board members. We inform him when ministers resign, when Dr. Chabula resigned in 2008. I recommended that he not fill the position purely due to budget constraints, and he rather, when we do have a more better funding situation, he's more than obliged to fill it, but it was purely a financial recommendation at that point. But it's the Minister of Sports' prerogative to appoint or not to, and he also has the prerogative to remove someone from the board. The Honourable Mackenzie's question on the positive test, how many school children tested positive? It depends on how you define school children and when they are school children. We had positive tests for 18-year-olds. We the cyclist was 17 and a half, but he wasn't in school, and he was tested in an international competitive cycling event, so it didn't fall under a school event. And he tested positive for an anabolic steroid. The rugby players who were under 19, and we can only test them when they in a competition like Craven Week or those type of competition where it's not the Department of Education's jurisdiction but the sports jurisdiction like South African rugby. We do test at the age level but not necessarily in the schools, like when we have national and provincial swimming or athletics, we do test at those levels. I take note of your comments and working closer with the Department of Education, and we will be pursuing that. The Honourable Van der Linde, rest of the codes tested and how many tests? We did deliver. Unfortunately, you either forgot it in your office or didn't know it was ours, but we did deliver the annual report as per Treasury regulations by the 31st of August, where we do list the all the codes, and I think it's 54 codes that were tested, ranging from, as we mentioned, the top five to codes like duathlon, basketball, archery, life-saving, figure skating, and all the details are in there.
Don't be clever, because you expose us, and then we have read that CD, and then it's in detail. So don't think that we have not read. So don't pay attention to that. Leave it. Because you are inviting a lot of problems for your family.
But I can go through and let you also know what the codes are that we have tested. Then you also asked in terms of school sport outside of rugby that we test, and again it depends on the level of competition and the jurisdiction that we have, and at, whether it's hockey, again sports like hockey, athletics that, and volleyball, sorry, netball, they compete also in what we call the school's winter and summer games. And we had in the end of 2008 we had the Kosana Games in Potchefstroom, where we did, I think, about 150 tests, and many of those were school children. So we do test across the board in other codes. It purely depends on the level of competition and whether we have the jurisdiction, as long as it's not a club-to-club. The problem with school sport, and again coming to the issue of rugby, which we've experienced, is when the private schools play, because there seems to be a legal gray area. And the irony of the private schools, and I'll mention the names of the schools like the Grey Colleges, the Bishops, the Hiltons, they come to us, and this time of year between January and March, I have on average at least two or three emails a week from these schools. Please come test us. Please come talk to the kids. And we do send out people. We do talk to them. The problem with testing is they want us to test. They know there's a problem. They're looking at it from a risk management perspective. They don't want these schools. And the minute I tell the principal, if I come in there and your kid tests positive, do you know that your kid will be kicked out of sport for 2 years and there will be public information? And that's when they pull back and they say, well, you actually don't have jurisdiction. They want me to report a positive, and they will take the kid to their disciplinary committee. Now, the minute I do that, I put the agency at risk with our international compliance, because from an international compliance, that's not allowed, and it's complicit. We're not then pursuing a case within terms of the jurisdiction of sport. So that is the area that we have to clear up, and if they understand that correctly, then there'd be easier in terms of testing. We have thrown our resources more at education, and as I mentioned, the program with the Central Drug Authority last year, this level of sophistication, knowledge of these kids were definitely disturbing. So we, the content, when we do presentations to kids, and it's not only a power presentation, but they actually get bored within 5 minutes. We use different formats or activities. We actually use really scientific terms and chemical terms because they're aware of it. They ask us that in terms and their knowledge of anabolic steroids. The Honourable Suka's question of, I think I touched on with the other sports that we tested, and the areas of problems, whether there's geographical areas. I'm going to be loath to say that there's a problem in the Western Cape or Gauteng, because it's going to be unfair to those areas and paint you a very distorted picture of areas that there are no problems, because sport generally in the country is urban based. So outside of sports like athletics and soccer that are really played almost in every corner of the country, rugby is still very urban based. With the national and international competition, with the PSL, we will test from the north down to the south, to the east, to the west, and that's probably the only sport that extends to the breadth and width of the country. So based on that, statistically, obviously you're going to get more positive in the urban areas or in certain provinces. So it's going to be a bit unfair to necessarily point out a geographical area, but I can't tell you where we have seen problems, and it's not because of its urbanization or because sports are centered there. There is a problem in Durban, there is a problem in Gauteng, and that problem is because there are drug manufacturing labs that we know of in those areas, and those drug manufacturing labs are steroid manufacturing labs. Now you ask the question, why do you keep seeing steroids on the list of positives when, I mean, if you're an athlete, you know you're not supposed to use it. Now that is you using common sense and logic. Athletes don't necessarily use that, and that's why today we have the Winter Olympics that started this week. Why do you still get positives at the Winter Olympics if you're competing at that level? It's just the nature of cheating. Someone's always trying to push the envelope. But the added problem of that is not so much that they, all of them are taking it knowingly. Some are also taking it unknowingly. We have a problem with sports supplements, which is a major thrust in terms of education to high school athletes. The supplements that you get on over the counter, the cliques at the Dis-Chems, at the Sportsman Warehouse, they come from the U.S., they come from overseas markets, and they are co-mingled with anabolic steroids. So something that you may take that says Testo Boost X or Anabolic X is going to make you look like this, it only has creatine or whey powder. It also has some other steroid mixed in it that they don't necessarily list, and they're not obliged to list it as a pharmaceutical company. So that's one of the reasons why you continually get anabolic steroid positive. Also, the level of sophistication, again, as we saw with the Marion Jones, the Montgomery, and the Balco cases, for years they were manufacturing a steroid that we were unable to detect. So if I'm peddling steroids and it's a highly lucrative black market, and I know you're an athlete and I know you're looking for a shortcut, I'm going to tell you this one is so sophisticated, the drug testing agency can't detect it. So you're going to take that risk. And again, that's probably why we continually to get steroids. The unfortunate part of the steroid positive is we're seeing younger and younger athletes. As I mentioned, the cyclist and the one tragedy, as I mentioned to the media, we're the custodians of drug-free sport, of keeping clean, sport clean, but we never wish for any athlete to test positive in the country. And it was sad for us to report on the positive of the 19-year-old Nolan Hoffman, who was one of the most promising black professional cyclists, who admitted to the use of steroids because he was struggling with his cycling career and with an injury. I don't foresee that the issue of steroids will stop being reported in our list of positives. You know, so if there are any other questions.
Thank you. We're going to take short question. We've gone for a little bit long, and then Comrade Cedric, Cora, Donald, and the last, Mackenzie. Yes, sir.
No, Chairperson, thank you for the responses. I just want to mention something that the Honourable Suka mentioned earlier, that this looks like a summary of another report. You see, because in your report you say doping control statistics 2008 to 2009, and there you say you've performed 2,255 tests, but there's an asterisk. What does that mean? Because according to the report the department gave us last year, they say actually you performed 2,037 tests.
The 2,255 includes tests that we don't pay for. That is asked by us, performed by the UK Sport, by the US, Australia, or the IRB. So it includes those. The Department of Sport is going to report to you the statistics that they gave us the money to pay for. So that number is going to be slightly lower. Their number is going to be slightly lower.
Okay, so you say if you don't pay for it, who pays for it then?
When the UK Sport requests a test on an athlete that's training in Stellenbosch, we don't use South Africa's, we don't use our grant money to pay for an athlete that's not South African.
Okay. And then also, Chairperson, in terms of the, I would like in future the number of sport codes. It's good that you indicate the top five codes, but it will be easier if you say, and the department say you tested 37 disciplines, is to basically rank all of them. And to say, because it makes referencing a lot easier. But the last question is, what is the cost of one test on the athlete?
The in-competition, as I mentioned earlier, the, what I call the Saturday test, which we test for more substance, including the employing the officials to collect the fee for collection, the travel, and all that, about what we will charge someone like the UK Sport or US to do that is 2,900 rand. And then out-of-competition tests or the Wednesday test, including collection, analysis, equipment, is 1,800.
Correct.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just want to understand, I see that your board of directors, I don't have a problem with it. It reflects the demographics of the country. But if you go to your audit committee, then there is no African there. And I don't understand, because we need to be very sensitive when it comes to race issues. We can't have a situation like that if we don't have the people in the country. Thank you.
Again.
Chairperson, yes. One of the reasons why PDA one number, why it got away, was, according to you, that the Wednesday test, or the other competition test, did not include, you couldn't test him for recreational drugs. Now, I would suggest, and it's because of the international rules. Now, I would suggest, Chairperson, that South Africa, that we amend those rules using the Peter Wannenberg situation as the example. Understand? That is what I will do. Really, because we must, you know, everybody and everything must be covered at all times, Chairperson, for that. And I want you to become a Chairperson.
No, Donald, the answer will come from that gentleman. You want me to support you on what you're saying?
I want to support you.
Okay.
So, I mean, that is, as South Africa, we should really then amend the rule so as to include in a Wednesday test also test for these recreational drugs, Chairperson.
Thank you, Donald. You're right. That's why I'm saying they must tell us whether it's a question of a legislation. If it's a legislation, and then the CEO must come to us and say, the legislation is enabling us to do 1, 2, 3, and 4. Then we must come back. Because we are coming from a democratic country. Some of these things were not there, CEO. There was never a time where in this country athletes were deliberately, in terms of the law, were tested. There was never such a thing. Now, when we do a legislation to comply with international practices and all that, you are likely to have some other things falling within the cracks. And as and when you move, you must be able to do amendment to tighten up your piece of legislation. Mr. McKenzie?
Thanks, Chairperson. I admitted in my earlier comments to talk about private schools. I just think that the thrust of this committee has been addressing the needs of school sport. And I think this is no different. And I'd like to suggest that the private schools are penalized unless they fall under the same measures, testing measures, as the government schools. Because I think what we're creating here is an imbalance where private schools, if they don't like the potential results, can withdraw from the system, whereas people at a government school can't. So I think private schools must fall under the ambit of everybody else, and they can't just merely withdraw because it doesn't suit them. Thank you.
Thank you. CEO, I think the members are raising a very important thing. You can't, in your private home, and kill your children, your wife, and everything, and the dogs, and then say it's a private home, and therefore you must undermine the law. There's nothing like that in this country. If these private schools, because you mentioned these private schools, and at times you said private entities. Private entities cannot be a hub for corruption and a hub for crime. And because we're saying the legislation doesn't enable us to go there. Let me tell you, this association, article of association, and all these trivial things that you are respecting, they're not above the law in this country. Not even any other legislation. If there is a protocol, international protocol, in practice of any other association, can only be applicable in as far as that is concerned, but it cannot be above the law. Your article of association and all these other things cannot say you must practice racism, and therefore you are given a green light by that virtue of that association. No, it can't be. So I'm saying here you must go and look into this. Members are making a concrete input and saying, go and check what are disabling issues here on the legislation, and you formulate, and then the minister would meet with you, and then the legislation must come back to Parliament. We must do an amendment on the legislation so that we tighten it up. But emphasis is going to be on these private entities and these so-called Model C schools that at any time when they so wish, and then they do that. Governing body and any other piece of legislation at any school is not above the law of the country. So that it must be a hub for drugs. It can't be. So you must quickly do those things so that when we meet before next year, at least you must have discussed with the minister and say the portfolio committee requested you to look into that piece of legislation, issues that are making you not to be able to be effective, so that you must be able to come and do an amendment on that piece of legislation. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You've spoken. Okay. You can answer.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. In terms of the legislation, we have identified actually in the strategic plan as a key performance area that the legislation is inadequate. Also in the areas, in addition to the areas that you mentioned, the one area that I can definitely call that we did not identify was the one you mentioned earlier about the composition of board members, which I'll now include in the list. But we will be looking at the legislation. The legislation at the moment is anemic, as we now know, in terms of giving out jurisdiction in terms of school, but it's also very weak in terms of other areas. So we are looking to strengthen and increase, and we will bring it to the portfolio committee.
Yeah. You see, so the members of the board, collectively together with you, are accountable to Parliament in terms of Section 54 of the Constitution. And you can't have a board that our friends appointing each other to that board, or the minister sit in his office and appoint a board that is accountable to Parliament. There's nothing like that. A board application goes through, a board is appointed by these honorable members because they are going to be accountable to Parliament. And the Department of Sports has been doing things very wrong. And they're saying the board must be appointed in any other different way. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. It's illegal. It's wrong. Or that board must not come to Parliament. We'll chase it away. Because it's accountable to whoever has constituted that board. Because the board, and collectively with you, they are responsible to come and account to Parliament on annual report, on any other processes that go there. If there's a difficulty in drug-free, we're calling drug-free and the board to tell us why there is a collapse of order in the drug free. Then you say, these are the issues. The CEO is the Secretary General of that entity. And therefore, the board will not interfere with the work of the CEO in as far as that legislation is concerned and that area of operation is concerned. But the cue and the direction, political direction, is from the board members who are appointed by the legislation through parliament and account to parliament. And how do we call people who are not appointed by us to come and account to us? We don't even know those kind of people. So that is a dilemma that we have with that piece of legislation. And therefore we must confront that problem and be able to deal with that. Because I don't know when the board says that, but Donald, you're calling us on what basis? Donald will say, yes, on what basis, but the fact is the fact is he will not be able to give substantive issues on that. Yes, he will say, I'm calling you in terms of the constitution that says parliament can call anybody, and even if it's in the grave, to come and account to parliament. That is what the law says. And Donald Lee will use that section of the constitution, but fairly, he will be calling some other people who doesn't belong to him, who has not even constituted a part of that. So we must deal with those kind of things. And we are serious about them, CEO. We have to deal with those kind of things.
I'm making a promise now for the record that by the mid-year, and by mid-year I'm referring after the World Cup, we will report to Parliament on the status of those developments.
Can you put away your
Yeah, the other comments from Honourable Cora about the Audit Committee and are noted.
The question of about an amendment to their rules, is that a way to how do you do it, or can we as a country opt for rules to be amended?
The rules are, we have jurisdiction internally, so we can amend that. That's an article of the legislation, so that can be amended without the process of affecting the legislation. The irony of your question is that after the Wannenberg case, I did actually seek a legal opinion on that with, as you say, can I do the in-competition battery during on the Wednesday? And we can do it. The legal opinion was, you can do the full test. If he does test positive for cocaine, you don't have to inform, as per normal regulation, you don't have to inform the athlete or the federation. We will then target him for, as we call, the Saturday test and if we don't get at least a positive after two tries, we will then inform the federation that the athlete has a problem, and that the suspension can happen within the jurisdiction of a doping suspension.
Thank you, CEO. I think that Donald keeps asking those things because 99% of your rules and the constitutions of all the federations are in sharp contradiction with the constitution of the country. Let me give you a practical example that we are grappling with. Rugby has what you call 54 provinces. We don't have 54 provinces. We have 9 provinces. We don't have 54 provinces. And 108 regions. We don't have 108 regions. And the sports people, it seems it's difficult for them to restructure their federations, national federations, so that they must conform to what is the law says in this country in terms of provinces and regions. And I think the time has come for us now as members to do that unashamedly, because it's our own constitution, and the sports people cannot have their own little constitution elsewhere that supersede our own national constitution and the laws of this country. And we're going to deal with those kind of things. So you must check those regulations. Donald is asking out of concern, because some of the regulations are in sharp contradiction with what our laws and the constitution of this country is all about. Your regulations cannot be in contradiction to the law. your regulation cannot be in contradiction to the constitution of this country. There should be harmony in those things. Because it's your little island where you are able to do it your own way and then you say it is legal when we do it our own way. It is not legal for as long as it is in conflict with the general laws of the country. Before you go away there, your presentation and the work that you have done, you have been consistent for 3 years doing a splendid job. It was not a joke when the committee members were saying, tell us how much do you want? Because you are confronted with the huge task of making, of ridding this country of this rampant drug that is going on there. And that is why that 100-something% has gone up, because the argument that was brought by the chair was a compelling and a painful argument. And then we have left with no other choice but to go and seek support and go and say, we think drug-free deserve it, because this is the kind of work. Because your mandate now has been far exceeding that the mandate that you have in 2 years ago of the type of the testing that you're doing, in and out testing that you're doing. But the question of a very nice word that drug-free is using, comrades, I have a little bit of a problem of a recreational drug. A dacha is not a recreational drug. You must see somebody who's taking a dacha. You can't even stand up. You see his mind is twisted from this side. He's sitting at this other side. And then when you call it a recreational drug, it sort of is recreating, doesn't use drug. But he's using a drug, and then it's a very serious drug that he's using. So I don't know whether in a very sophisticated scientific way you call it a recreational drug. But I don't know what is recreational about it. It's a beautiful English. I don't know what is recreational about it, as CEO.
Honorable Chairman, I agree with you, and I'm extremely comfortable. In a radio interview, I mentioned that, especially in the context of sport, when we talk about, in terms of sport, and we talk about a recreational drug, the term was formed and used by the industry in terms of social workers, and so they use that term. We have been looking, I tend to just name the substance rather than the classification, because it does cast a light that it's enjoyable or not so serious.
Yeah. The issues of administration and compliance that you raised about, I think those are pertinent issues, because the core of the transformation rests with administration there. If you have an intransigent administration, you'll never be able to deal with issues of a very painful aspects of transformation. Administration is very important, because if your administration is not right, then you are not in a position to have your machinery oiled, running smoothly, because you have a problem with administration. And I think your argument on that is fine. And then I think your argument is right. But we have asked you last time to begin to discuss with the police, because in the last report that we got, there are hubs of cocaine manufacturing companies, industry, which is blooming outside there. But drug-free, after they've got this person, is able to tell the drug-free and put them to the lead and say, this is the hub of the drug. When you arrive there, it's a manufacturing company which is bigger than Parliament. But drug-free is not in a position to arrest and do any other thing, because you're not police. Then we said, you must go and check in how we can have a model, because even after you have received that, then the police have to go and investigate and do everything, and then all the processes of the police have to do that. But you're not in a position to can have a compelling thing that would make the police, after you discover that and you are able to go through. But I'm not saying you must be like Dr. Adams and just reveal anybody's secret anywhere. I'm not saying you must be like him. But the most dangerous person who, when you tell him what is your state, and then he goes around and talk about those things. I'm not saying you must do that. You must be careful in terms of prejudice that you're talking about, and you must be careful in terms of that information has to be managed by the police in a gentle way that finally police will be able to prosecute that person. But these members of parliament have information that you know these nests where these drugs are made. But you are not in a position to can deal with this, and therefore the police and the justice have to be part so that at least you give them referrals. Then they must be able to deal with that. And then we have requested you to deal with that so that if there is a problem, we can meet with justice and the intelligence committee, and so that we can say, guys, we have a problem. Here we need a concerted effort of all of us to be able to deal with this matter. And then I don't know how far have you gone in conclusion about that matter. Thank you.
Chairman, do you want me to respond?
Yes,
As I mentioned, the progress has been really slow in terms of that, and we're hoping to step it up, and irrespective of whether the Central Drug Authority cancelled the summit in 2 weeks' time, we will still go ahead, and there is an urgency, and the pressure that I'm feeling on this is both from my board and from other entities in terms of the intelligence information that we receive.
Once more, I think you have done well. And you are doing well about the resources that are given to you. Your audit is something that we don't worry. But when it comes to boxing, and then the DA just get mad on us about that. But thank you very much. You ease the pressure on us, CEO. Thank you very much, and then you are released. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Honorable members, we are having visitors who they will tell us who the names of those people in the line. Who are their names and all that, but they are coming from Gauteng cricket. The chaos that is going on there in Gauteng that we have been watching going on for some time. Firstly, it was the Gauteng cricket and their national body. And all of us, we wanted to check what kind of a body is this one that would take their own national body head on. Then today, 3 days, 2 days ago, then there was a complete change of the board and the chaos that had gone on there in boxing, in cricket. Then we evoked the exception of the constitution that these gentlemen must come and present to us and tell us what is going on there in the name of sport. But we want to say to the gentlemen that have come, we are appreciating you. Thank you very much for your effort to come and meet us, because it is a concern that we have pretend that we don't want to deal with this matter, and so that we could hear what is the problem there. But there is a problem in Gauteng there. It is bigger than what you think it is, in our view. So we hear what could be the problem there. And so that we share our views with you, and then say, no, our perceptions might not be right, and the perceptions might be wrong. And then because 2 days, 3 days ago, I think it's the CEO. You're a CEO, ne?
No, Honorable Chairman, I am currently the chairman. The then CEO on my left, Mr. Alan Khoury.
Oh, yeah, it's you, the chairman.
Yes.
Who said, no, we've done this legally in terms of the Article of Association. Then where I was seated, I nearly fell on that sofa when you talk about the Article of Association and all that. But I thought, just wanted to get clarity on the Article of Association. But the only thing that has not happened is that they brought you chair alone, and the board is not here. Now, we wanted to talk to the old board, not the new board that has come in there. because the new board doesn't even know what is happening historically in Gauteng cricket. And then because we have asked Dr. Nyoka to give us information about this, he gave us information in as far as his concern of the saga that went on between Gauteng cricket and South African cricket. And that's the report that he has given us. Is this one that we wanted to share with the old board and the CEO. I'm happy to say that you come as the CEO. But I want to chat from the minister to the members. We're talking to the chair and the former CEO. Are you the chair at the time of the old board? Were you the chair up until now?
Honorable Chairman, no, I have not been the chair. I've
just been
appointed.
Yeah. See, that is a little problem because I don't want unfairly to ambush that gentleman on the thing that probably he has an idea, but he was not the chair of that organization at the time. But it's up to you, honorable members, to say if you walk in, you are a leader of the organization, you carry responsibilities of all what has happened there and all that. Just like when you appoint you as a director general, we ask you of everything that has happened there. But I just want to get an understanding. Comrade Kora, Comrade Suka, Comrade Honorable Lee. Comrade Kora.
I want to make a concrete proposal here. If we want to deal with this issue of Gauteng cricket, we need to have everybody here in this room. Because now, as you correctly say that, the new chairperson, the new board, won't be in a position to keep us that. What? Who is fooling who in this thing? Why is this Gauteng cricket in this mess? So if you want to deal with this thing, deal with the wound, not with the cause of the wound, then we need to have everybody in this room and so that we can discuss everything in detail. Because now we're not going to do justice to this thing. We're going to get a thing from a new board which has been born yesterday. Thank you.
Correct, Suka.
Thank you, Sir President. You know, it's my birthday. I don't want to spoil my day. That's why you I thought I wasn't going to say anything, but rather to take the tune from Utatu Kora. You see, this is our first meeting with the new board. And the new year also, moving forward. We know, we would like to rewind the undo those wounds that have been cemented. But surely, we can't move without having at least some kind of a background. Because we must learn lessons from what happened in the past. And as such, Chairperson, I would have loved to see a situation so that we find one another on a sound footing to get the executive or the new board so that also we open up the lines of communication, knowing each and everyone equally to yourself, so that tomorrow if there are difficulties, people should not distance themselves and say, no, the chairperson. Who are not part of that. So it would have been very nice for cooperative governance by law to get your executive. Or at least, I'm not sure by how many people is it constituted the board, because sometimes some members are hooked up in their own commitment, but at least a quorum that could be a fallback, a quorum. 50% plus one, it would show some kind of respect to the committee, would have maybe reviewed or considered itself. So I'm saying, Chairperson, our first meeting with the new Chairperson, I don't want to have a wrong impression in my mind. Well, the first impression only goes a long way. So that's my little bit of, I'm adding on what the Dr. Dokora is raising, but maybe I'm having a banana voice today. Because it's my birthday. Thank you.
Yeah. Thomas? No, Chairperson, now I understand. You know, I couldn't understand why Alan Khoury was here for drugs
So now I understand his presence here. Because he's known as one of the greatest cricketers that this country has ever produced. So, now I understand. That's first of all. Chairman, I received a notification for this meeting. And this is not an item on the agenda. So, but that's not really the point. In other words, I didn't know about their presence here. That's the first thing. Secondly, and I concur with what you are saying before I say, you know, if and your introduction to the matter was, it was about that there is something wrong, you understand? And that we want to hear all views. And if you want to hear all views, chairperson, I think it's just fair. Because you can't ask the new chairman's questions about, you know, somebody else's versus perhaps chairperson. Now, I think it would be fair if we have everybody present here. Or perhaps that was a good recommendation that we have 50% of whatever the quorum is. You understand, chairperson? So, I think that will be the best way of dealing with this matter. Well, and the important thing, chairperson, you know, this is not about personalities. This is about sport in this country of ours. I love cricket. I really love cricket. And I don't want any cricket to be sort of destroyed, chairperson. Because it's opportunities for our children, that's what we are talking about, chairperson. And that is what we are. We should view these matters. And therefore, we must get these things out of the way, you know, not in a settling of scores sort of a way. We must do it in the interest of cricket, of sport in the in South Africa, chairperson.
Thank you. No, thank you, Donald. Gentlemen, I want to be honest with you. It was in the light of the very same negative publicity of what is happening there. The EU is one channel that I can tell you shocked you when it put this matter. But it's not about the matter of settlement costs. And meeting, it's a meeting that the chair made a discretion that this meeting should take place, which members are welcome and agree with it. But they're raising a very important thing. And this meeting, when you have the Sports Act of 2007, when you check section 14, 13A and 13B, it says, every sports and recreation body must, before the 1st April of each year, submit to sports and recreation in South Africa in writing. Membership statistics and all these other things, one of those things is that they must have an annual presentation as and when the committee so feel it befitting. So if we are not going to ask you about the annual report in order to interview you in the long run, because if we have to do 150 annual reports of sporting codes, is going to be a big work for us. But we'll be doing some random checks. Whether what you call the corporate governance is something that you are upholding as the institution in wherever you work. But I want to say to you, I want to agree with the honorable members. Chair, because we are going to ask you some of the things that probably not informed or dispute what we are getting from the reports of your mother body of what is happening in Ireland. And when you dispute it and then Donald is right and then Gerald is not here or anybody, and then we're left with, say, which now is the right one that we have to take and conclude. Because one of the things that I would ask you is that the minister has said to the outgoing board, because there was a problem in Gauteng cricket, and let us do mechanism in building the sport in making 50-50 black and white and to move forward and all that. Then those dynamics were given to us by Cricket South Africa because they were part of that process. And now, when we ask you as the new chair on those things, I feel members are right. I'm compelled that they're right. Maybe it could have been a better wisdom if I phoned one or two and say, guys, this is a problem that is going on there. This is what I'm intending to do. They could have given this view earlier than that time, but there's no thing that they've done. But I think, Chair, we will not put you on presenting anything of this matter, but we'll give you enough time. Could be time of 3 months or whatever, so that you with all other people that are involved in this, with the defunct board, and then because you are the chair that time, at this time, you'll have to come with them and then not the entire board, because it's very costly to do that. But very strategic. It could be the former chair of the board and some very people that were closer in decision making there, and they have this meeting, and then you must see how far can we help you in resolving the issues of the Gauteng Cricket Board. Yes, Chair.
Honourable Chairman and members, I think I would like to concur and agree that if that is a process that we could follow. I was actually prepared as the invitation to do a briefing on the development programs of Gauteng Cricket, so it's something completely different to what I expected. So I do appreciate the wisdom of the committee and also yours, Honourable Chairman, and I would gladly go back to the constituents and make sure that we do prepare that in good time. We can give the committee a fairer view and picture. And also, I would like to thank you and the committee for reaching your hand out in trying to assist us as a national body to try and resolve. And I would like to echo the views of Honourable Member Lee that cricket is not just a game for us, it's a way of life, it's a passion. It's something we eat, dream, and sleep, and it is it's in our interest to make sure that it is healthy in a province like Gauteng. So I'd like to thank you and the committee.
No, thank you very much. The chair, I think you see the English is not even the first, second, and third language to most of us. The brief by Gauteng Cricket Board on development. It was not sports development. I was saying, maybe I conveyed the message and then the secretary thought that I was saying about the current developments that are hitting the media of what is happening there. So it's a question of on which side of the fence do you understand this? When I was talking to him, he understood that we're talking about these current developments that are going on there. So I don't think there's anything really wrong. So your preparation also was on the other side of the fence, understanding that you have to give us a development program on how do you deal with a development and all that. So it was a little bit of a question of a language there. But accepting our humble request that we don't want to do. You see, this committee has passed the act which is called the ambush marketing. So we're protecting you from ambush marketing so that at least you must survive. But thank you very much for understanding. Thank you very much, the former CEO. We thank you very much, and then we want to be grateful of accepting our understanding, because we want to go a little bit deeper on this matter. Thank you so much. You can go home earlier, because we'll be leaving here a little bit later than you expected. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Honourable members, let's adopt the minutes before we go to another level of the meeting during this day. Can you just wait for me? Don't go, eh? Members, let's just have a 2 minute break, just for freshening ourselves. Just 2 minute break. When they were giving pyjamas in Beijing, it was a hell of a thing. Donald Lee wrote me a 2-page letter. So this matter has been coming up and all that. So we have to deal with this matter and then dispose of it. But it's not the only matter that we have to deal with, SASCOG. SASCOG have to tell us on the entire membership of SASCOG that is at lottery there, with a sharp conflict of interest there. And then they must tell us, because that gentleman who is the chair of the board, He was in pain, Mr. Foster, to tell us on what is happening there. And when SASCOC is not there, members of SASCOC, there is no quorum. So it means they've taken all decisions in the presence of members of SASCOC to form a quorum, and all those decisions were wrong, illegal, because there was nobody. If they have declared it was a javelin type of a thing, where I would tell Mackenzie must look at my thing there, and then Mackenzie passed it and all that. Yet I'm not inside the meeting, I'm outside. So those are some of the things. It's not going to be just an ordinary meeting that goes through there. And all of them are presidents of the Federation. You can't not give Swimming when it has produced near Regnetling and this other one, what is it? Roland Schumann and all that. Then you give them a little amount of money, then you give table tenants 7 million. There's no rationale that will tell you why. It's crazy. And the Sasco must tell us on what basis, and then he's the chair of the lottery. He must tell us on what basis is he doing that. Athletics South Africa produced one medal in Beijing, but he was the least given money to go to Beijing. But in all the federation, they were the only one who brought a medal into the country. And then how do you do that? Basin, what? Badminton, what is badminton, what? Badminton.
Badminton.
Yes, badminton. And volleyball. Volleyball gets 7 million rand. Volleyball. It's not even it has never taken people to the Olympics. Badminton gets 6 million. And then badminton is the trump office. And then the one that produces people who are going to compete for us at the Olympics, you don't give them money. And the very funny thing about SASCOC, immediately after Beijing, at the time when people went to Beijing, there was no money from SASCOC. When they come back from Beijing and Mr. Sam took over as the president, then there was a pouring of money to all federations. Now, at least they must explain to us, there are things that are not there just right there, and it would be unfair if we pretend that we don't attend to those things. I think the letter that Donald Lee raised, he must tell us first, because people in SASCOC told us, I'm going to tell you, that the clothing for the team to go to Beijing, the whole team that went to Beijing,
yes.
Charlie Reddy flew from Gauteng and go and knock in the door of one Indian in Durban and say, here is a tender of 500 million. We want you to do clothing for the team that goes to Beijing. Yes, it is true. I'm going to tell you that it's true. But you can't do that. You can't do that in terms of corporate governance. You have to open up that thing, because the money that they are using there is lottery money. It is not technically government money. Lottery is an act of parliament. It's established by the law, and therefore they must open up this thing for anybody who has knowledge, who has what it takes, and openly compete so that he must get to those things. And now SASCOC must tell us on what basis has that.
Who made that?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know who's that person, but I know there's a person in Durban that they went to go and give him and say, yeah, it's...
500 million.
Yes. Go for the whole entire team that went to Beijing. For the whole entire team, that even that 500 million is a little bit.
And the pajamas as well.
The pajamas were costing 500 million. The pajamas. So we must discuss with SASCOC a little bit. So it's not just going to be mechanical. And the people are going to sweat a little bit on that.
I don't know what they want for 500 million.
Honorable members, there are a set of minutes in front of you there, please. They start with the date of the 28th of May 2009. Donald, you are there, don't worry. Donald, move for the adoption of the minutes of the 28th May. Suka, second, Donald. We're going to the 30th of June 2009. 17th of June. Donald, you were there?
I was there.
Cora proposed and Donald second. And then we're going to the 30 June. Mr. van der Linde proposes.
No, there was
a political. No. So I'm not taking yours. I'm not taking yours. Suka moves Cora second. On the 7th July, at least Mr. Mackenzie proposes,
yes.
And then Suka second. And then there is, on the 20th of October, Grace proposes, Memali Shiva second. And then Malishiva was never been up there. And then this one, for I don't see the date here. Tuesday, the 3rd to the 4th November, yes. Yes. Annual report, Mr. van der Linde proposed Grace second. Then, honorable members, you see a bundle of those things. We have adopted the bill, and the bill is ready, but we have to, this is the report of the deliberations and what the Schaeffer clause and all these other things. This is the proceedings of what happened to the up there, because the bill is already passed. So can we adopt this proceedings as Mackenzie proposes? Cora second. And then honourable members, I've said the Cory must give you this bill. You remember we've adopted the bill and say the lawyer, the young lawyer, and Cory must go and do comma and all other things. They have not done anything on the bill. I have checked it because I know that Donald, when he's resting at home there, he's going to check this. You can't trust him. I have checked it. Okay. So I have checked on this thing. It's exactly what the bill is all about as at the time when we're adopting it, and then it has gone. So the only thing that has happened, and that is just for members for information, because this bill has been taken for translation. So very soon we will be debating this bill to the National Assembly. So I'm sure members have this. Thank you very much, honorable members. Honorable members, let's go and have our lunch, because we'll break earlier. We'll not have lunch. But let's 2 o'clock, Donald, we want you to lead us on the soft COP matters, and we'll also be ready at that time. So the meeting stands to adjourn up until 2 o'clock in this room. Thank you.
Why they didn't use the
old chair was because Bush arrived there.
Yes, you're right. No, you're right. Okay. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to make sure that is what was said. Because of Bush, that is in there. No, but don't understand. You remember the question from Bush going there. Yeah. Either they were telling you long ago that the president of America will be coming, and therefore the department was not supposed to book the hotel. Or the department had booked the hotel long before, and the president arrived there and just to go, but therefore they need to be reimbursed.
Yeah.
As the department of
Yeah. No, that is exactly. That is why I'm
asking to change this. Because it can't just be something that the department says, no, the money is unauthorized and all that because Bush arrived there. No, you can't take that.
Okay, sure.
No, it's not good. It's not good. It's not good.